Anne-Marie Erickson in conversation with our staff librarian, Tammy Bobrowski. She's got a new book out, and she's giving a reading tonight in Grand Rapids at 7 p.m. Her book is called In the Evening We'll Dance, a memoir in essays on love and dementia. That's going on tonight. We'll hear from Anne-Marie coming up before 9, and at 9 o'clock this morning, it is Headwaters, and your host is DJ Ding. Coming up later today, On the River with Judy Gruey at 1 o'clock, and at 7 o'clock, we are on the river with Old Man Winter. We receive support from Hot Tubs of Northern Minnesota on Middle School Avenue in Bemidji, with hot tubs, pool tables, saunas, and more. Learn more online at hottubsmn.com. And we'd also like to thank Clockel Brewing Company, Grand Rapids. They make traditional old world styles of beer and modern classics, and have for 7 years now. Their taproom is open Monday through Saturday, noon to 8, Sunday from noon to 6. More info at clockoutbrewing.com. This is 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker. People-powered radio in northern Minnesota. Join us at KAXE.org.
For KAXE News, I'm Larissa Donovan with the Up North Report. The Minnesota Department of Natural Resources says water sample analysis of several St. Louis County lakes found measurable amounts of zebra mussel larvae. The presence of larvae known as veligers in Lake Vermilion, Lake Cabotegama, Crane Lake, and Namekin Lake indicates a reproducing adult population of the aquatic invasive species, even though no adult zebra mussels have yet been confirmed. The water sampling was part of a long-range monitoring project. The DNR says it's not unusual for veligers to be discovered before adult zebra mussels, especially in large lakes, citing Rainy Lake's veliger discovery in 2021, with no adult zebra mussels yet confirmed. The City of Bemidji and Northern Township hosted a joint meeting as part of the administrative trial over boundaries around Lake Bemidji. More than 100 attended the hearing at the Sanford Event Center last week. City leaders made the case that annexing land around the lake would best address the decades-long goal of eliminating septic systems. Northern Township also presented its plan for becoming a city, firming up its boundary and building a separate sewage plant for the northern and eastern sides of the lake. Bemidji Mayor George Prince made a final offer to the Northern Town Board before the trial begins later this month.
Highlights of our offer would include city-installed water and sewer utilities around the lake, delayed hookup plan and deferred connection fees, a generous tax reimbursement tied to phased annexation.
Northern Township Administrator Chris Lane says they have listened to constituents and are determined to move forward with their plan.
We've been down this road several times over the past 4 years talking about annexation, and every single time we've been basing our actions off of your guys' feedback, which has been clear and overwhelmingly, we do not want annexation.
The city's plan includes annexing some of the most valuable homes in the area along Lake Bemidji's Gold Coast, amounting to somewhere around 30% of the township's tax base. Consultant Matt Stark with Baker Tilly, among the city's experts, says the annexation would relieve the township of expenses, like maintaining streets and supporting the Borough Fire Association.
Fire dues are based on value, so I anticipate that City of Bemidji would be taking over $60,000 or $65,000 worth of the fire costs.
Some of the residents within the contested area expressed some frustration with both local governments, like Susan Whalen.
We haven't been contacted as far as what we want, and it's frustrating. I mean, we haven't been contacted by the city, we haven't been contacted really by the township to ask us specifically.
The trial will begin with Northern Townships detailing its case the week of September 29th, with the public hearing set for September 30th at the Beltrami County Fairgrounds. Bemidji will detail its case the following week, with a public hearing set for October 8th at the Sanford Event Center. All 11 flags of Minnesota's sovereign tribal nations will fly at the state capitol starting this Friday. The flag-raising ceremony in St. Paul will celebrate the permanent tribal flag plaza on the grounds of the capitol. The project was spearheaded by Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, a White Earth Band member herself, and was initially requested during the governor's tribal summit in 2021. The project was developed in close coordination with tribal nations and the state legislature, which provided funding for it in 2023. The Capital Architecture and Planning Board says the plaza honors the unique government-to-government relationship between the state and tribes sharing Minnesota's geographic boundaries. The ceremony Friday will begin at 9 a.m. in the lower mall of the Capitol grounds. St. Louis County Public Health and its partners are presenting the first ever Community Connect event for the Ely area on Tuesday. The event will offer a meal and transportation to and from the Ely area community hub from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. via Arrowhead Transit. Resources and services will be offered for housing, children and family, health insurance, mental health and substance use disorder, warrant resolutions, vaccine and disease education, and more. The event is based on the national project Homeless Connect, which began in 2004 in San Francisco and has since spread across the country. That's it for the Up North Report. Find more of our stories at KAXE.org, where you can also find content from our music, morning show, and phonology teams. From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Larissa Donovan, telling the stories of Northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report on KAXE is sponsored by Woodland Bank, dedicated to serving local businesses, families, and nonprofits in our area since 1920. You can find more information online at woodland.bank.
It's 7:06. Coming up, more news from National Public Radio. We're learning about a Senate committee that is holding a confirmation hearing for President Trump's latest pick to serve on the Federal Reserve Board. I'm Heidi Holton with Kari Hedlund.
Morning, Heidi. We received support from the Bonner Eye Clinic with locations in Grand Rapids and Hibbing, offering cataract surgery, LASIK, and general eye exams. BonnerEyeClinic.com. Let us help you see clearly.
We are getting so excited for Grand Rapids Riverfest. Got a couple of chilly days, maybe some rain here today, but by Saturday, Riverfest day, partly sunny, highs in the upper 50s to low 60s.
I've been hearing people very excited to be putting on some jeans and sweatshirts for this weekend.
I know. There's nothing better.
No. I talked to our production head last night, and he's like, I personally love working in this weather. I don't know how the attendees will feel. And I said, buzz is pretty good so far.
Yes. You need socks. If you've got some sandals you're still wearing, pack socks.
Just like a teenager.
Because that will help. Yeah. More news coming up next.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. Amy Martinez in Los Angeles, California.
And I'm Michelle Martin in Washington, D.C. Good morning. President Trump is trying to exert more control over the Federal Reserve.
One test of that effort will come this morning when a Senate committee holds a hearing on Trump's nominee to fill a vacant seat on the Fed's governing board. In a few minutes, we'll hear from Democratic Senator Elizabeth Warren, a member of that committee. Trump is also hoping to fill a second seat by ousting Fed Governor Lisa Cook. That move is being challenged in court. The potential shakeup at the Fed poses a serious threat to the central bank's independence.
NPR chief economics correspondent Scott Horsley is with us now to tell us more about this. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning.
Scott, what are the stakes here? Is this mainly about Trump wanting lower interest rates?
Interest rates are certainly part of the story, but more broadly, this is about power and who gets to control decision-making at the Federal Reserve. Trump has made no secret of the fact he wants lower borrowing costs, and he's likely to get that wish when policymakers meet in a couple of weeks. That's because the job market is showing signs of softening, and lower interest rates might help to cushion that a little bit. But Trump wants more. He wants to install more of his own people at the central bank. He's nominated a White House economic advisor, Stephen Miron, to fill one vacancy on the Fed's board. And if he's successful in pushing Fed Governor Lisa Cook aside, he'll get a chance to put another ally on the board. That would mean 4 out of 7 Fed governors would be Trump appointees. And the president told reporters last week he's looking forward to that.
We'll have a majority very shortly, so that'll be great. Once we have a majority, housing is going to swing and it's going to be great. People are paying too high an interest rate.
Now, two caveats. One, the Fed does not directly control mortgage rates. Those are set in the bond market. So this move could actually backfire if investors come to think a Trump-dominated Fed might let inflation get out of control. And two, Congress set up the Fed to be insulated from exactly this kind of political pressure from the White House.
So, Scott, what's your sense of how this is going to play out?
Right now, the fight's being waged on two fronts. One's in the courts, where Lisa Cook has filed a lawsuit to prevent the president from firing her from the Fed board. Trump and his allies have accused Cook of mortgage fraud, but Cook denies that and says that's just a pretext to muscle her off the board. While that's being sorted out in the courts, the Senate has a chance to weigh in. We will hear in particular if any Senate Republicans stand up for Fed independence. They have done so in the past. We will see if they're willing to challenge the president this time.
Is Fed independence likely to come up at today's confirmation hearing?
Yeah, I'm sure we'll hear a lot of questions, at least from Democrats on the committee. Trump's nominee, Stephen Miron, co-authored a paper last year in which he argued the president should have more control over the Fed's board of governors. Now, he also suggested a ban on people moving from the White House to the Fed, although obviously that is not in effect right now. Most other advanced economies have decided it's a good idea to insulate their central banks from meddling by politicians. Fed Chairman Jerome Powell says it just makes for better long-term decision-making.
If you were not to have that, there would be a great temptation, of course, to use interest rates to affect elections, for example. And that's something that we don't want to do.
Powell's own term as Fed chairman runs out next May, and at that time, Trump will have the opportunity to name a new chairman. Powell could remain on the board as a Fed governor, however, through 2028. So far, the Fed chairman has not said whether he plans to stick around that long.
That is NPR's Scott Horsley. Scott, thank you.
You're welcome.
One of the senators questioning Stephen Miron is Massachusetts Democrat Elizabeth Warren. Warren and other Senate Democrats have voiced concerns over his nomination in part due to his views on Fed independence. Our co-host Steve Inskeep spoke with Warren.
He is clearly a cheerleader for Donald Trump's economic policy. He agrees with the president, or the president agrees with him. I'm not sure who starts the ideas and who completes the ideas, but they play the game of hand in glove. And that is a real problem because the Federal Reserve is supposed to be independent of the president. And the big question is, will he?
Miron gives the impression that he does not necessarily believe in the full independence of the Federal Reserve.
Yeah, that's kind of a warning sign right there, isn't it? Look, today there will be a hearing about his nomination, but that is not the right hearing for the Banking Committee to have. Over the last few months, Donald Trump has launched three huge attacks on the independence of the Fed. First, threatening to fire Jerome Powell, then deciding that Powell had spent too much money on renovations of the Federal Reserve building and he could fire him for cause. And when that failed, now trying to fire Lisa Cook, another member of the Fed board. All of them direct attacks on the independence of the Fed. Right now, the Banking Committee should be investigating the president's direct attacks on that independence, not pretending that it's business as usual.
Given that the president has challenged the independence of the Fed and many other federal agencies in a way that nobody has seen for a long time, why does the independence of the Fed matter that much? To the average person, they may not get it.
If we have a totally politicized Fed, not a Fed that's making decisions about interest rates, for example, based on the best data they've got, but a Fed that says, "What do you want us to do, Mr. President?" Then what happens is everyone loses confidence in the Fed, in our central bank, and in the decisions they make. And that ultimately drives up the cost of mortgages and car loans and credit cards for Americans across this country. And this isn't a theoretical argument here. We've actually seen this happen before. Countries where authoritarians take control of the central bank suffer from higher inflation. And who does it hit hardest? It hits working people across that country.
Some people will know that you have been sharply critical of Jerome Powell, the Fed chairman, from time to time. How would you rate his performance now?
Look, I've completely disagreed with Chair Powell since he was first nominated by Donald Trump. That's how far back he goes. I have disagreed with him on regulatory policy. I think he's way too easy on the banks. And I have disagreed with him on interest rate policy. I thought he should have lowered interest rates 2 years ago. And I have said so quite vocally and done my best to persuade him. But I have never, ever questioned the independence of the Fed and the Fed's ultimate power to make those decisions based on their best judgment of what's good for the United States of America.
So you, like the president, are hoping for an interest rate cut this month, it sounds like, but you're saying your methods are different.
Yes, but what I don't want to see is that Donald Trump has squeezed out the independence of the Fed, and that he's managed to get his own lackeys in there, that he's managed to fire someone at the Fed, because as soon as that happens, the value that the United States has built up literally for more than a century by having an independent Fed, we lose the gold standard, and ultimately that costs the American economy, and it also, most importantly, costs American workers.
Do you believe that your colleagues privately, your Republican colleagues, are concerned?
Oh yeah, I think some of them are. We need independence really across the board for our financial regulators, because as soon as the politicians can grab them by the throat and say, for political reasons, here's the economic decision I want you to make, people start to understand that the whole game is being played on a political playing field, not an economic playing field. That doesn't make for a stronger economy. That doesn't build our GDP. And it sure doesn't make life better for American workers.
Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren, always a pleasure talking with you. Thank you.
Oh, always good to talk with you, too. Thanks for having me.
Secretary of State Marco Rubio says there could be more U.S. strikes on suspected drug traffickers. He made the warning in Mexico before he traveled on to Ecuador. NPR's Michelle Kellerman reports that fighting the drug trade and illegal migration are key topics during the trip.
The U.S. military strike on a boat from Venezuela was meant to be a message to cartels in the region. That's how Secretary Rubio described it as he stood alongside his Mexican counterpart at a news conference in the capital.
If you're on a boat full of cocaine or fentanyl or whatever headed to the United States, you're an immediate threat to the United States. And the president, under his authority as commander-in-chief, has a right under exigent circumstances to eliminate imminent threats to the United States.
He says that's what Trump did on Tuesday, ordering a strike on a boat from Venezuela. Rubio says the U.S. will continue to hit groups that it considers narco-terrorists.
We're not going to sit back anymore and watch these people sail up and down the Caribbean like a cruise ship. It's not going to happen anymore. They're not going to bring drugs into the United States. We're going to stop them.
When it comes to Mexico, Rubio says the two countries have reached a level of historic cooperation on combating the drug trade and illegal migration. Mexican Foreign Minister Juan Ramón de la Fuente echoed that, though he stressed that their cooperation is based on mutual respect for sovereignty and territorial integrity. He used those terms many times during their joint press conference, especially when asked about the pressure the Trump administration is putting on Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro.
We believe on self-determination, non-intervention, peaceful solution of controversies. All countries are legally equal. We believe in cooperation for development, and so on.
De La Fuente was upbeat about Rubio's visit, though, and the meeting with Mexican President Claudia Sheinbaum, calling it productive. The secretary is now in Ecuador, where the drug trade and immigration will top the agenda again. His aides say he's also looking for ways to help this country get out from under what they call a giant albatross, Ecuador's $2.5 billion debt to China. Michelle Kellerman, NPR News, Quito, Ecuador.
This is NPR News.
It is 7:19. You're tuned into the Thursday morning show, People Powered KEXC, where you get a mix of national news, great music, local voices, information about what's going on in our region. In about an hour, we learn about the 130th birthday of Old Central School in Grand Rapids.
There is, if you are coming to Grand Rapids for the festival this weekend, there's a really great wrap-up Malachi put together covering, there's a lot going on. There's a lot to do between Friday and Sunday. So go check out that wrap-up. at KAXC.org, where it talks about this birthday celebration for Old Central School. This is the Thursday morning show. I'm Kari Hedlund in here with Heidi Holton. It is chilly this morning, but it feels kind of good, Heidi.
It does. Have a couple of layers. Wear the socks now. That's a big key to staying warm, don't you think?
It really is. And the last 2 days have been the first days I haven't worn sandals in quite some time.
I got some new socks recently, so I was like excited sock weather. They're very comfortable, which seems weird to say about a sock. But
you know, maybe it's just something with age, Heidi, because I love a new sock as well.
I know.
I'm ripping through all my old ones, so I had to invest in some new socks.
Yeah, but I got some at a thrift store, brand new. Great. Oh my gosh.
How do you feel about socks at a rummage sale?
I don't think I'd look at it. I mean, it doesn't totally gross
give you
me
the
out.
Skeevies, but no.
Yeah, but yeah. I guess if it was a expensive brand, it looked pretty new. Sure. Maybe.
Sure. Yeah. Like a nice, really nice pair of wool socks or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. But other than that, no, probably not.
Yeah. I don't really look at undergarments at
no. I've not been to any rummage sales this year.
I just realized that myself. Yeah. And so 2 weeks ago, I stopped by an estate sale.
Oh.
And I got a gorgeous, it's like really heavy duty glass, red glass pitcher.
Oh, wow.
It's so beautiful. I'm like, I can see iced tea in here. I can see, I'm so excited about that little pickup. But
you should start doing videos of going to estate sales. That's my stress reliever on
I do love that.
Social media. I don't know what the deal is. I absolutely love it. Going into, you know, thrift stores or estate sales and people are telling you what they're getting. Some are making things out of them and they show you how they're cleaning something that looks awful. Oh,
you and I must be on the same algorithm because that is also my favorite.
Yeah.
Yes.
Getting a little weird. I don't quite know why I'm so into it, but
can't stop.
Let's look at the weather ahead for Saturday. It's going to be beautiful, partly sunny, highs in the upper 50s to low 60s on Grand Rapids Riverfest Day.
Yes, and today, as you've noticed, it has been a little bit of a cool down over this week. I brought in some plants last night to make sure that they weren't going to be freezing outside. Good chance for some showers today, increasing clouds, highs 50 to 57. Tonight, showers are likely again, temperatures in the low 40s. Did you see yesterday afternoon, out of nowhere came a downpour while it was sunny in the background? And then it turned to hail for like a solid minute here at KAXE.
Wow.
I don't think elsewhere in town though, because
yeah, I don't think
everyone
I've
talked to.
I was working from home yesterday. It didn't happen.
Yeah.
It rained, but I didn't see any hail.
Yeah.
I think I would have heard it, right?
Oh yeah, you would have heard it. Malachi was leaving and he bikes to work, right?
Yeah.
And so it had downpoured and hailed and we'd watched this happen. And then he left and within 30 seconds of him being out the door, it was another downpour. I was like, oh no.
What a day. Hey, there's a cool thing going on. We heard about it yesterday on the Wednesday morning show with Andrew DeZingle. It's tonight or this afternoon, 4 to 7. Tally Gallery at Bemidji State University is hosting a new retrospective exhibit of work by Marley Call. There is the opening reception today, 4 to 7, in Bridgman Hall on the BSU campus, looking back at Call's 60-year artistic journey with some never-before-seen works. And it's going to be on display through October 30th. Find the story at KAXE.org.
KAXE and Stay Human are presenting another storytelling series, The Authentic Voice, live Saturday, September 20th at 7 o'clock at Clocko Brewing in Grand Rapids. The event features nationally known storyteller Lauren Neamy, along with some of Stay Human's regular contributors, made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
Later this morning, we're going to hear our staff librarian in conversation with Anne Marie Erickson. Tonight at 7, she'll be speaking at the McCrossey Art Center about her brand new book. In the evening, we'll dance a memoir and essays on love and dementia.
We receive support from Minnesota Power, an elite company, envisioning a carbon-free future through their Energy Forward strategy. More at mnpower.com/energyforward.
Our very own John Bauer is on display at the Ripple River Gallery. He's not. His work is.
I actually love the visual of John being on display.
And it's a dual exhibit. It's called Reclaimed, Reframed, and it's got sculptures from John paired with photographs from Rachel Kane. The exhibit proves that one person's trash is another person's treasure. It's open Wednesday through Saturday, 10 to 5, and Sundays, 11 to 4 in Deerwood.
Can't you just envision John laying on his side with his hand under his elbow propped up?
Holding grapes over him or something? You've... You've picked out some music for us here, Kari.
Yes, we've got a new one into the station from the Womack Sisters, and they have an upcoming album, and I think you're going to love it. They are Sam Cooke's granddaughters, but also nieces, or they are related to Bobby Womack as well.
Okay.
What is the connection here? I know this. Give me a minute. Let's listen to it, and I'm going to think about it.
Say goodbye to Mrs. Wright. He missed his day, and she left that night. But I know.
Trying to tell him.
That's Womack Sisters. Kari's been wanting to tell us about them. Now you figured it out.
Yes, I just couldn't remember what the connection was between, obviously, like Bobby Womack and Sam Cooke, you know, played together and were in music together. But I had forgotten the very important piece that Bobby had married Sam's widowed wife after Sam was killed.
Oh.
And so that's the Cook-Womack connection. But that is the Womack sisters, who are the granddaughters of Sam Cooke. And so it's...
You can hear it.
Oh, yeah. And I'm just like so excited for that album to come out. It's so soulful, dripping with vintage inspiration.
Yeah.
Love it. You're going to hear some more great music coming up today at 9 o'clock. DJ Dang is your host for Headwaters this morning on KAXE, your source for great music. And then coming up this afternoon at 1 o'clock, oh, Judy Gruey is on from 1 to 4. And Old Man River is taking us on a journey tonight from 7 to 10.
Coming up at noon today, it's Itasca Water's free webinar series, Practical Water Wisdom. We're learning today about stormwater runoff and the problems it can cause. You can register for this at itascawaters.org.
Support for KAXC comes from Itasca County Health and Human Services, hosting the 17th Annual Community Connect on Thursday, September 18th from 11 to 3 at Yanmar Arena in Grand Rapids, featuring over 50 social service agencies providing info on housing, energy, county assistance, and more. All are welcome.
We've been collecting stories this week of stories from Riverfest. I think it'll be really fun to talk about, like, running into people and not just about the how great the music is.
Right.
But just these Riverfest moments that may have happened to you over the years. That's what we're kind of collecting here. Siri wrote to us yesterday about this will be her fourth Riverfest, and that right now is an empty nester. She's thinking of last year when both of her kids were there and one of her elementary students, and she can't wait until Saturday. So,
you know, when I read that text yesterday, one of my favorite things about these festivals, from our festival that was right outside the KAXC studios to the festival that it is now, my children have grown up at this festival, and I know a lot of people have the very same story, not just because I work here, but they have grown up going to these, and it's just like a natural part of their life up here. And I just think that is so cool to the kids running around, throwing footballs in little herds around the grounds of the venue. It's just one of my favorite things. So I think even if you like kids or not, it's wholesome.
It is. It's great. They're having fun. There's plenty of space for them is why it's not a problem.
Yes. Plenty of space to run around and it's safe and it's just a great environment for those kiddos. So thanks, Siri, for that. And then I also was thinking about this question because it's, you know, who music wise have you been introduced to through KAXC? Who have you seen live because of, you know, the station? And I was trying to think of that yesterday as I was planning Headwaters. It's like too many to name.
I know.
I don't even know sometimes where to start with that kind of list. Do you know who I'm going to see next week that I'm really excited that KAXC has introduced me to? Chuck Prophet.
Oh, wow.
Is playing, and I've never seen him perform. Have you ever seen him play?
No.
So I'm really excited to see. There's lots of newer artists, too, that I'll be seeing next week. I'm going to Americana Fest in Nashville. But Chuck Prophet is one that kind of stands out of like, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely would like to see him.
I know. It's hard to think, but we would love your stories. We'd heard from someone who said they went to Charlie Crockett and Leon Bridges recently. And is definitely because of what they've heard on KEXC. So text us now. 218-326-1234.
And also then there's people like Noah who were introduced to a different Kiss song yesterday by Andrew, who played a really sappy Kiss love song.
I heard that made quite a controversy here.
I'll be honest, I did not know that Kiss song either that Andrew played. But did you have a Kiss phase in your life?
No, I did not. No.
Yeah. They were talking about dressing up as Kiss at KBXC, which my sister did one year, and that was like the one costume that, no, sorry, Jen, but truly, it was like the one costume you totally killed. Like, it was amazing. You know, like kind of one you can't top.
You could have said that different than it.
I could have.
You know, you could have been a little, you didn't need to have like a.
That qualifier
comparison
of like,
in it. But I understand. Made You're for the a better, younger sister.
Made so. For a better statement, Heidi.
Uh-huh. I'm sure she's loving that right now.
All right. You are. We've got best wishes coming up. We are also going to be talking about Central School turning 130 years old. And we've got our news update coming up from Larissa Donovan. We receive support from the Brainstorm Bakery, headquarters of Crapola, with four flavors of granola handcrafted at the bakery on East Sheridan Street in Ely. Online ordering available and more at brainstormbakery.com.
Coming up this Saturday, you can show your support for veterans at the third annual Meatloaf Run Motorcycle Ride, hosted by the Combat Veterans Motorcycle Association, and it travels from Grand Rapids through Itasca and St. Louis counties, ending up in Blackberry.
And tomorrow, the Metza Garden in Virginia has a fall plant sale and produce swap from 8 to 1. The garden is located on Bailey Lake on 3rd Street North. That's tomorrow from 8 to 1.
I was picking cucumbers yesterday out of the garden. We're getting so many cucumbers right now.
Are you?
Mm-hmm.
These are the days that I didn't get a garden in this year. And I am a little disappointed by that. But also, this is the time where I kind of regret my gardens because it's so much work.
Yeah.
And I'm just tired. So it's okay.
Most of our garden did not do great. We had beets.
We did.
And there's a few left. They didn't, even though we fence it, somebody was eating the beets.
Yeah. Darn rabbits.
Got in there. Yeah. So
chipmunks
many,
probably,
so
actually.
So many rabbits right now around our place. But our apples are coming in. We've got a lot more apple trees than we did. And some years they don't produce, but this year it seems like all are producing. So now I'm kind of thinking about, we'll be making some cider. I have made applesauce before. I'm not like a huge applesauce fan.
Me neither. I've made some and I honestly still have it in jars because we just don't eat much applesauce.
So maybe I won't do that. Although was I talking to Amy Thielen about this? Somebody about the applesauce. Yeah, I think so. And she was saying it was somebody else. But it was about, it's good for baking.
So can you, because you probably could use it instead of apple cider vinegar?
Yeah, you could, but also like use it, it would make things moister, like a...
Oh, like a cake?
Yep, or even a banana bread. It probably wouldn't even taste that apple-y, but a banana bread with it instead of, probably can substitute some of the, what would be the butter? Probably, I mean, not totally, but if you put in some milk into it or something.
I've heard of applesauce as a baking.
That's like, what I meant. That's,
oh, I thought you were talking about apple cider.
I might have said cider.
Okay.
But yeah, that might be a good reason to do that. But anyway.
Yeah.
There we go. I think it's time for best wishes. We do our best to wish our friends and neighbors happy birthday and happy anniversary.
Also, just want to give a shout out to all September babies because we're something special, including Molly Turner, who's turning 56 today from Bemidji.
And Dave Harrington, happy 66 to you from Bemidji. Hope to see you this weekend.
Dustin Prim, turning 51 from Bemidji.
Finn Jorgensen, happy 17th to you from Bemidji.
Happy birthday, Finn.
Hope to hear you back on the air.
No kidding. Becky Manu, having a birthday today from Blackberry.
And Jess Philbrook, happy 40th to you, Jess.
Happy birthday, Jess. If you have a birthday or anniversary to share, you can text us 218-326-1234.
Now you've got...
little OK Go.
Yeah, tell me what...
We're... Okay, so you remember... OK Go has a new album out, and you remember OK Go from making the huge splash on the treadmills, the video that they made. Do you remember this, Heidi?
I do not.
Okay, we're going to have to share that in our team's chat later.
Okay.
But they went viral before going viral was a thing.
Oh, okay.
And I think they never really, they've always been known for that, and people just kind of always go back to that one song. But they're I'm not trying to be
all right.
Discrediting. They have a new album out. It's really good. This is OK Go.
Hey!
okay, go.
Okay, go. That was love. I thought you were telling me to, okay, go.
Yeah, do it.
Talk. Get it, Kari. And you're listening to the Thursday Morning Show, and I'm going to be sharing that video with you, Heidi.
I think someone already did.
Oh, they did?
Yeah.
Look at that ahead of me. We also heard from Liberty from Boston, who said Brandi Carlile has a new song coming out, or she just released it yesterday, Returning to Myself, a new album out October 24th. Thank you for that, Liberty. I did get that song yesterday, so maybe we'll be able to get to playing that today, too.
That would be great.
She talks about in launching this new album that returning to herself is kind of a scary place to be, like being alone with yourself, and that she is not her favorite person.
Oh,
which is kind of an interesting statement to say, that you are not your own favorite person.
I know.
So it'll sounds like a very introspective and reflective album coming from Brandi. So looking forward to hearing more from that. So Liberty, thank you again for that text. You can always be a part of the conversation about what you're hearing here at KAXE by texting 218-326-1234. We receive support from Bemidji Brewing, announcing the release of the new Stinger Variety Pack featuring the Blood Orange IPA and Lemon Drop Blonde, available in liquor stores now. Bemidji Beer, nice catch.
And thanks also to Coldwell Banker Northwoods Realty, helping guide your real estate journey in northern Minnesota since 1947. From buying or selling to land or lakeshore, Coldwell Banker Northwoods Realty. More at coldwellbankernorthwoods.com.
Coming up at 9 this morning, it is Headwaters. DJ Dang is bringing you a great mix today. And at 1 o'clock, Judy Gruey is your host for On the River.
Coming up, we've got our nature note from John Latimer, and then we're talking local news. We'll check in with our reporter, Larissa Donovan.
On today's date, I had a lovely hike in the woods in Balsam Township with a fellow named Al Hupila. And Al was a great woodsman and a wonderful associate. We had many nice walks in the woods. On this day, we came across Northern Holly, just becoming ripe. They have bright orange berries in the fall, almost tending to scarlet. And those berries are very, very bitter, very foul-tasting berries. They're filled with a chemical called saponin, and that saponin is in there to keep the birds from eating the berries before they're fully ripe. And it delays the consumption of the berries by the birds until late September, early October, when the plant will recover the saponins from the berries, store it in its plant tissues, and use it again next year. But the berries then become palatable to the birds, and white-throated sparrows and robins will hover on these bushes and consume all of those berries before very long into the future. Every bit as good as a finger covered in earwax. Very, very bitter.
Our daily dose of phenology. We had some great phenology talkbacks this week, and you can find the stories right now at kaxe.org. There was a kid that was out at Sugar Lake Lodge and went on a walk with John Latimer and recorded what we listened to on Tuesday. I'm trying to look for the line again, what he said. He said, "Nature is awesome, man." And he's like, "For you kids that are just reading about it, go outside, man. Nature is awesome."
This was a kid.
Yep.
Oh, I love that.
I know.
We saw lots of loons gathering on an adjacent lake from our cabin last weekend.
Yeah.
Like 10 of them together. Which we know what that means.
Right. We've got a lot of loons calling. I heard owls as I was falling asleep the other night. And just a lot of action going on. We have a blue heron blue heron. That's hanging out on our boat lift. And you don't notice it immediately.
Mm.
And I was like, what? What is that?
Those are some of my favorite creatures.
Yeah.
We had one circle our boat the other day. And I've never had one fly that close. And came around it was so much fun to see.
Let us know what you've been seeing. You can text us at 218-326-1234.
Support comes from Paul Bunning Communications, powered by the GigaZone, offering fiber optic fast internet speeds up to 10 gig and GigaZone Wi-Fi to support devices wirelessly. Paul Bunning Communications, Northern Minnesota's local broadband cooperative. And the McCroskey Arts Center in Grand Rapids is hosting an open reception for the group exhibit Expressing Grief this Friday from 4 to 7. Five regional artists come together to honor the experience of grief in its many forms. You're going to hear that voice floating on the banks of the Mississippi River come Saturday. Jeremy Albino. So excited for him, for Ellen Sparhawk, for Margo Price, Courtney Barnett. Tickets are still available at GrandRapidsRiverFest.com.
As Malachi said, he puts money on Jeremy being a standout. One of those artists that maybe people don't know, but is going to be a standout for the weekend. Larissa Donovan is joining us now from our KAXE news team to give us our weekly news update that you hear every Thursday morning. Good morning, Larissa.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. So soft this morning.
I'm soft. That's unusual.
I know. That's why I said something.
Very nice.
Just kidding.
So, Larissa, you've been covering a big story, and it has to do with the Northern Minnesota Drug Task Force and something new that they're doing. Can you kind of lay that out for us?
Yeah. So these automatic license plate readers, once I learned they were in Bemidji, my curiosity was instantly piqued. Like, what are these devices and why are they here?
Yeah.
Like the ALPRs, these automatic license plate readers, like I talked about in my story, they have been around for a while, but they really started growing in popularity about 20 years ago, which kind of correlates in my memory as to the start on the war on terror, when like the mass surveillance of Americans basically began, right? This was a bipartisan issue where government wanted to surveillance all of us. After that. So I was a little interested in this from that angle and stuff. So the more I learned, the more I found out. And, you know, I think one of the more interesting takeaways from these ALPRs is the kind of data they collect on all of us. And, and then I was curious, like, well, what happens to that data? Where does it go? Like, is it really deleted after 30 days? Is it deleted after 60 days? My mind's all a flutter still.
Oh, Larissa has questions.
Yeah,
I still have questions. Yes. And I will get those questions answered. But there's only so much data you can get in so much amount of time. Right. So
my question is, OK, so this is the drug task force. And I guess I usually think of these license plate reading or these cameras as like, you know, where people are not paying tolls, people are, you know, speeding and then they get issued tickets. Like, I guess that's what I've usually associated that kind of surveillance with. So how does this relate to the drug task force?
So the commander of the drug task force, Dave Hart, says they got the grants funding for this. And I was actually listening to a county board meeting this week where they talked about these as well. And they're actually being leased. So the Paul Bunyan Drug Task Force doesn't own these cameras. They lease them from Flock Safety. And it kind of reminds me of Teslas, how nobody owns a Tesla. You only really lease them.
I don't know about that either.
Wow.
But like, if the grant funding for this initiative goes away, the cameras would too, I learned in that in that session. But still, they secured the grant funding, and Beltrami County was designated as a high priority fentanyl trafficking area last year. And that served as sort of the impetus for getting the grant funding for installing these cameras. But, you know, the Paul Bunyan Drug Task Force, it operates through a joint powers like agreement through multiple agencies. And it's really overseen by the Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. I put a map up of all the drug task forces in the state and how they're connected. And not all of them are like always like having counties connected to them, like in the Paul Bunyan Drug Task Force. Clearwater is not a part of it, which I found interesting, but I think they may have used to be, but.
Well, so what you talked to someone from the ACLU, what's the concern in terms of our citizens' privacy when it comes to this?
There is a lot of concern that what may be legal today could be illegal tomorrow. And the people who were lawfully abiding today could find out that their movements had been tracked for whatever reason. Like, it all kind of depends on who's in charge up top, right? What the political priority of the day is. The war on drugs has been ongoing for many, many years. I don't know if it's totally been a success yet, but the fentanyl crisis is also, you know, really severely affecting our area too, like this area as well. So like, it's one of those things, like a lot of people, you know, don't seem to be like really have too much issue with it right now. But there are some people who are, you know, law abiding people who are still very concerned that these devices could be used to track people or for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, keep us posted on that, obviously.
I will.
The other topic we were going to talk about today is an offer to Northern Township about that boundary.
Yes, so I've been covering.
Let's recap what the issue is again.
For a long time.
Yes.
But Bemidji and Northern Township are kind of in the midst of I don't know if I want to say feud, but it's kind of like an administrative battle of wits or something, where Northern Township would like to become its own city, put its own wastewater treatment plant around to serve the north and east sides of the lake. But the city of Bemidji is saying, no, we want to put those properties into our city limits, and we'll put sewer and water around them. So this hearing last week was both sides got to present. The city of Bemidji Mayor George Prince talked about the city's proposal and this offer for an orderly annexation instead of an order of annexation, which is it's very, unless you're a local government nerd, it's probably sounds really boring and the exact same thing. But what the city is doing right now is looking for a petition to annex, not even going through an orderly annexation agreement like Northern Township and the city of Bemidji have done before. The Northern Township used to come all the way down to where Target is. So this annexation stuff has been going on for quite some time.
You know, it was, I think it was in August, earlier in August, you also covered another story. And it's a story that had been going on in Grand Rapids, but we now have a new jail downtown, but that's facing a lot of cities. And tell us what's going on in terms of the jail and then the old building they might be using.
Oh, right. So they haven't made yet a decision on the old jail building. Progress on the new jail in the industrial park, it's about 40-50% there. They're planning on doing that interior build out
in Bemidji. This is in, yes. Bemidji. Okay.
Yeah. Bemidji, Beltrami County Jail. Yeah. So, but the old jail is just a block away here, but their plan, the cheapest option for them is to demolish and put in a new Sally Port at the judicial center. But they had not yet made a decision last time I checked on them about that.
All right. You can catch all this news and sign up for a Up North Report podcast. It's all available at our website at kaxe.org. We'll see you at the Grand Rapids Riverfest, Larissa.
You will. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Larissa.
Coming up, we will be talking about Old Central School celebration of 130 years. And then before 9 o'clock, we hear from author Anne Marie Erickson.
The Virginia Area Historical Society's annual Fall Fest is this Saturday in the Lions Club building at Olcott Park, starting at 4 o'clock with grilled burgers and brats. The featured speaker is Mark Sage, who will talk about Frank Higgins, one of many sky pilots during the logging era. We want to thank Dragonfly Coffee for their support, located in Central Square Mall in Grand Rapids, featuring a scratch bakery, offering espresso, bubble tea, and more, empowering inclusion and community through employment. Special orders available and more at drinkdragonfly.com.
Thanks also to North Homes Children and Family Services, providing compassionate mental health services to children and families in homeschool and in the community. More information, northhomes.org.
And this Sunday, the Clearwater County History Center in Shevlin invites you to an open house for National Grandparents Day. That'll go on from 1 to 4. Enjoy a car show, wagon rides, and refreshments. You can even make your own ice cream. Have you made any ice cream this summer, Heidi?
I haven't been. I used to make it all the time.
I know. I remember getting to enjoy some of your ice cream.
We kind of got on the kick. We had our nephew staying with us end of May and into June, and we got on the kick of more store-bought stuff and waffle cones.
I love me a waffle cone.
That became like the thing. And so we still have, like, I like doing a little mix. And, you know, it's not that big, right?
You keep the waffle cone in its shape, like you don't crumble it up or anything in the
right. I did try the waffle bowl as well, but I like the cone more. But
I like the cone more too.
I like mixing some of the ice cream flavors. Like, I'm just getting kind of the basic plain ones, chocolate, strawberry, mint chocolate chip sometimes, but like putting vanilla, putting them all in together, it's terrible. But, you know, it's also like, so much, you know, as prices have gone up. I mean, can we talk about the price of pop these days?
My gosh.
But this, I forgot because I didn't used to buy much ice cream. You know, if you buy even the store brand or buying a half gallon is not that much. It costs more to go to a place and get an ice cream cone than it costs for
100%.
Yeah.
Than to buy a tub.
Yeah. Not that, but anyway, I've kind of been on too much of a kick on that front. Probably need to wean off of the ice cream cones.
Yeah, it's fine. Okay. It's summer.
Okay.
You're not going to want them in the winter. I mean, maybe you are.
Down in front of the hot fire.